This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Federal political parties have lost their bid to keep control over voter information data following a British Columbia court ruling. They had argued that the BC Privacy Commissioner did not have the power to force the parties to turn the data over. But the judge disagreed, citing an individual's control of their personal information as fundamental and a value of democracy. The ruling says the parties are subject to the investigative powers of the province's privacy commissioner. The decision could force political groups to publicly reveal how much information is gathered about Canadian voters.
As the 2025 federal election passes the midway point, it is increasingly apparent that the federal political parties are not only battling for votes, but also for data. Canadians may not see it or even recognize it, but political parties are data machines anxious to collect and use as much data as possible about potential supporters. Sarah Bannerman is the Canada Research Chair in Communications Policy and Governance at McMaster University. She's been examining the privacy concerns with Canadian political parties for years, highlighting the growing disconnect between the expectations of individual Canadians and the reality on the ground. She joins me on the podcast to discuss Canadian political party privacy, or lack thereof, and explains the role that data plays in the modern political party machinery. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, it's really great that you've come on. You know, with the 2025 election now underway, there's also a battle for data in many ways underway. And I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of Canadians who might not see it or at least recognize it, but political parties are really, in many ways, data machines that are anxious to collect and use as much data about potential supporters as possible. To get us started, can you talk a bit about that data collection side? You know, what personal information are the political parties collecting and how do they typically go about doing it?
One of the things that's a little bit alarming is that we don't really know what they're collecting because we don't have a right of access to that personal information, most of us. Whereas when businesses or governments collect our personal information, they're accountable for that, and we can request to see what's being collected about us and correct it if it's inaccurate. But that's not the case with political parties. And at the same time, there's been various investigations and looks into what information is being collected. So there's your sort of standard stuff that many people might expect, like your name, address, maybe your phone number and email address. There's demographic type information, age, sex, gender, occupation. But then parties are also collecting stuff like religion, income, social media profiles, whether you've voted, political views, observations about households, like the number of cars in a driveway, number of children in a household. And this is not necessarily all political parties, I should say, but this is some of the worrying things that have been noted, particularly in an investigation that the BC Information and Privacy Commissioner did in 2019, finding that some parties were collecting, and this in this case was provincial parties, even some parties were looking at scoring your ease of persuasion. And also, I think with some of this, people don't necessarily always recognize that things like phone number and email can be used in ways to link information together. So information is also being collected that is sensitive in ways that people don't always perceive. So it could link together disparate information, such as, I assume, information brought in by data brokers. So this stuff is collected by the usual means like phone calls and text messages that people are getting, but also through things that people don't necessarily always think of as data gathering mechanisms, like online petitions. People think they're doing political mobilization, signing on to one of those. They're not necessarily thinking, okay, now my support of an issue is going to be part of my profile. Stuff like social media IDs, cookies, web activity, IP addresses, all collected. Data is collected through data brokers as well that might be providing all kinds of information, such as about neighborhood demographics or income, or I don't even know what else. And then also one of the other more worrying ones, because it so undermines the principle of consent, is that information is collected about you from other people who provide that information. So whether that's party volunteers who are collecting observations at the door, or saying that so-and-so might be interested in getting involved. All of this information is being collected into extensive party databases, and which starts with the baseline of Elections Canada information and then adds to that. So taking the electors' data, name, address, gender, so on from that and building on that, which is why access to the Elections Canada information is so crucial. And then the uses that that is all put to, from sort of routine uses that we might expect to contact electors or to do fundraising, to additional uses that people might not appreciate as much, such as using that information to prioritize where to canvass or where to conduct get out the vote measures. Also to do profiling and potentially statistical inferences about an elector's likely support, issues of importance to the elector, even possible analytics that would statistically infer things like personality types or other highly personal things. That was the basis of the Cambridge Analytica scandal that we may all remember. Even the possibility of tailoring messages in ways that a person might be open to target and design messages or prioritize people to contact, even creating kind of voter personas or stereotypical people that parties are trying to target, such as the famous one, which is Dougie, the profile that the Conservative Party put together of a white guy who likes beer and hockey and Tim Hortons. And all of that can be really useful for parties to kind of think about their messaging, to get beyond their own biases and preferences and kind of really visualize these voters. But it can also become really problematic if segments of voters or individuals are not encompassed by these kind of stereotypical portrayals. And then this information can be uploaded to social media platforms as well, like Meta or X, who then can use those phone numbers or email addresses that are uploaded to create lookalike audiences, to do algorithmic analysis and find additional similar voters to advertise to. And then this becomes even more with the AI and the potential use of AI to do even more kind of profiling and data gathering, the potential of gathering and extrapolating inferences through AI is just astronomical.
In some ways, it's pretty stunning to hear just the breadth of data collection. You know, of course, on this podcast and my world, much of the focus is on digital, but you know, you've highlighted that literally this is collecting data at the door. And then the way that same information can get used in so many ways, I think, is pretty astonishing and clearly touches on our day-to-day experiences across a range of different places. Now, I know that you've conducted surveys on people's awareness and attitudes towards data collection by political parties. Before we get into the law, I'd love to know, you know, what did you find in terms of people's attitudes towards some of these practices?
Yeah, I did a survey, a couple of surveys, but one mainly with Julia Kalanina, Nicole Goodwin at Brock, and Elizabeth Dubois at the University of Ottawa. And we surveyed Canadians about what they knew about political parties' collection of personal information and also their opinions about that. And what we found was that very few respondents were really aware of the range of information that parties are likely collecting, especially beyond the basic information. And we also found that respondents really felt that consent should be required for almost every type of collection, even those that are standard right now, like the information that Elections Canada provides to parties, such as name and contact address, whatever. That is provided without consent to parties. It's provided by law. And yeah, it was amazing that majority of our respondents felt that even that basic information should be subject to consent. But especially more sensitive information, half or even a larger share of our respondents felt that parties should never be allowed to collect more sensitive information such as occupation, religion, income, sexual orientation, social media profiles, political views, or ethnicity. In many of those cases, a majority of our respondents said that that type of information should never be collected by parties.
You've certainly highlighted how that's not the case. In fact, much of the information that you cited off the top really goes to that kind of personal information. You hinted at it in your first answer, but you know, it sounds like there is a gap here between at least what people's either expectations or their beliefs are with respect to data collection and where the law stands. So, you know, I guess the question becomes, do the usual privacy safeguards, namely PIPEDA, apply to political parties?
And the simple answer is no, because PIPEDA applies to commercial entities. But there is a more complicated answer in the background. There is a British Columbia law, Personal Information and Privacy Protection Act, that does apply to organizations. So that applies a bit more broadly, and organizations is interpreted as encompassing political parties. Big question, does that apply to federal political parties? And that's something we'll get into more, but also in Quebec as well. There are privacy laws that would apply to political parties. But this BC law is really a focal point because BC, the Information Privacy Commissioner, has really taken on this battle, this fight to try to provide privacy protection for British Columbians in the context of political parties, including federal political parties.
Okay. I want to come to the BC situation in just a moment. Before we do, let's talk for just a sec about what the federal government was doing with respect to this issue, because it certainly was on the radar screen a little bit. There was a bill, Bill C-65, that did focus on electoral reform legislation. Privacy wasn't a primary focus there, but it did have some implications. That bill has died, we should be clear, given that we're now in an election campaign. But what did the government propose with respect to this issue? And I know that you raised some concerns. Maybe you could describe those as well.
The way I look at C-65, it had three purposes and pillars. One was about engaging people in elections and confidence in elections. So those were interference, measures to prevent election interference, access to elections. A second one was to give MPs pensions. It would have enabled 80 MPs to reach the 6 years of service they needed to qualify for House of Commons pensions. And the Conservatives made big hay with this aspect of the bill, saying that, and at the time it looked like the Conservatives would be likely to win a next election, and that a number of Liberals would benefit from a new ability to have a parliamentary pension. But the third pillar was the real point of the bill in my mind, and that was the least talked about pillar, which was to supposedly put privacy provisions in place, more robust provisions that would govern political parties. But these provisions, in the way that I look at them, were so weak that it amounted to a privacy erasing bill, a privacy removal bill. And for me, that was a real point of the bill, even though it wasn't highlighted by parliamentarians.
Maybe you can highlight it then. What were, you know, that's pretty strong words to talk about erasure of privacy. How did you feel that it undermined privacy rights?
Well, political parties sometimes pay lip service to the idea that privacy law should apply to political parties. But they have declined over and over to do that. They have fought privacy laws and the principle that those laws would apply to them tooth and nail in the courts, all the Liberals, Conservatives, and NDP. These parties do not want privacy law to apply to them. Why not? That's a good question. Most likely, it's because they're sitting on a lot of data that Canadians would find really objectionable and would be shocked to find out about. And I think that the hidden part of C-65 was not so much the parliamentary pension stuff, but it was the extremely weak, and I think that's an understatement, privacy provisions that were in the bill that would govern political parties, and that I think were also aimed at undermining the application of the strong privacy laws in British Columbia to political parties, or to limit the damage of those laws to federal political parties. And in other words, the purpose of C-65 was to be able to say that here we are in federal parliament, we're making a move to govern privacy for federal political parties, and we're intending to do that, and we don't therefore intend that provinces will do the same. And in that respect, this was a move to undermine or limit the damage to federal parties of the applicability of that British Columbia law to federal parties, which is the whole issue in question with this legal case going on in BC.
Okay. All right. That sets it up nicely to get into what's happening in BC. You've referenced it a couple times now. Clearly, it moves things in a different direction with respect to privacy. Why don't we start first with what the law does, and then you mentioned there's a case ongoing right now, and then we can talk a bit about how it's been addressed in the courts.
So there were three residents of British Columbia who were concerned about the kind of detailed privacy profiling of electors that they thought might be going on in federal political parties. And because they were some of the lucky few Canadians who do have privacy rights being in British Columbia, that including a right to access their personal information, they requested that information from the political parties, and they also requested to know how it was being used. And then they weren't satisfied with the outcome of their request. So the British Columbia Information Privacy Commissioner launched an investigation, and the federal Liberal, NDP, and Conservative parties took the whole thing to court on the constitutional question of whether this British Columbia privacy law even applies to federal political parties. Or is federal law, being the Canada Elections Act, or PIPEDA, the one that would apply to political parties, federal political parties, excluding the provincial law? So a key question is, can these two laws coexist? Is there a federal law that applies in this area? And then does it kind of take paramounts over the provincial law? And then as this was sort of going on in June 2023, lo and behold, the federal parliament introduced a bill claiming to put in place a national, uniform, exclusive, complete federal privacy regime for federal political parties, to further bolster the argument that the federal parliament was acting, and the argument that this federal law would take paramounts. But all that this did under C-47 was grant parties the right to collect, use, disclose, and retain personal information. It didn't have any new protections for Canadians. So it fell far, far short of the 10 fair information principles that are considered to be core of privacy regimes. And the chief electoral officer, the standing Senate committee, did not think this was a national, uniform, exclusive, complete privacy regime. In later C-65, in March 2024, again, another bill was introduced to kind of widen the scope a little bit, arguably, to create such a regime. But in this court case, with these complainants in British Columbia, the judge ultimately looked at all this and decided that, first of all, C-65 never was enacted, or it didn't know at that time that whether it would or not, but it wasn't. And C-47 did not amount to a paramount regime, and therefore decided that the British Columbia law did apply to federal political parties.
So we've got a privacy law that applies to political parties. We've got several BC-based complainants seeking to use that law as part of a request to federal political parties for information and some other rights. They're unhappy with the result they get. They take it to the BC commissioner, who finds the parties are offside. Case goes to court. Federal political parties argue nothing. There's no need for BC privacy law here. We've got we've got this, first through C-47, then through C-65. BC court says, you don't have this. C-47 didn't do very much. C-65 at that time, it wasn't clear it was going to be passed or not. It wasn't passed. If that's where we're at, up to that decision and the efforts by the federal parties to essentially stop that BC case in its tracks a little bit, where do we stand now? So C-65 is dead. The BC court has their ruling. Is the case subject to appeal? What lies next with respect to the effort to use BC law to apply to privacy rights to federal political parties?
My understanding is that the case is being appealed and that there's an upcoming hearing at the BC Court of Appeal, and that it could be headed for the Supreme Court ultimately.
So we've got, in a sense, almost two tracks here. We've got this court case that at least, it's not quite a Trojan horse, but represents a mechanism to try to bring at least provincial privacy laws to the federal arena when it comes to political parties. And we've got these so-called efforts at the federal level to deal with the issue, although it sounds like from the experience so far that political parties of all stripes are more inclined to sort of essentially rubber stamp what they're already doing or try to give them a clear-cut rights to do what they're already doing as opposed to try to constrain some of those rights. If that's the situation, and here we are in the middle of an election campaign, what should individual Canadians be on the lookout for with regard to the collection of their data? And I suppose even more, what can they do about it? Are there any rights of access to see what's in the file, rights to demand that things be deleted? What can individual Canadians do about the situation?
It's a very discouraging situation for Canadians, I think, because where we can look for our rights is in the self-governing privacy policies of political parties, which are very inadequate in comparison to what we normally, the rights we normally have in relation to businesses and government. For example, the principle that we should be able to consent to the collection of personal information is largely absent from those policies. There's a ability to kind of read some information that's super boilerplate about how that information is used, but it's not very full. It doesn't give a very good picture of how parties are using our information. And although some parties sort of state that you can correct your information by sort of emailing them to correct it, if you don't know what they have or a right of access to see what they have, then how can you move to correct that information? There have been a number of looks at the inadequacy of those policies that parties have. I think that Canadians need to really be kind of alive to this issue because there's sort of some bigger issues, I think, at hand. I know from our survey that a lot of Canadians are concerned, and top among their concerns are about hacking of party databases or disclosures of highly sensitive information that might happen from those databases on purpose or not on purpose. But I think that there's some even bigger issues to be aware of. Like, one of the concerns that I think about is the ways that this actually changes the nature of democracy, because political parties are now sort of appealing to people's unvarnished selves, to actual behaviors that can be measured in data, by doing, for example, A/B testing of ads. We issue two different versions of an ad. Which one gets more clicks, which one gets more sign-ons to our petition or whatever. And then you can manipulate the ads and basically try to get a better response. With no ethics board like we have in universities to do what's ultimately a kind of experimentation on electors to try to win support and figure out what wins more support in experiments that electors don't even know are going on. And so this is a very different type of process and engagement than what we think of elections as being, which is about deliberation and collectively deciding as a society what kind of society we want to live in and be. This is instead based on people's actions alone, you know, interacting with data in various ways when they don't even know that they're taking actions that have some kind of political significance and that certainly aren't deliberative. As well, the other thing that's a concern in light of the extent of data that's being collected and the inferences that may be being made is you think about also what happens if the wall between political parties and politicians or government breaks down and all of this personal information becomes available to government itself or begins to be used in other ways, such as for vetting people in political appointments. What if it were to become used at the border? Or what if there were other uses made by authoritarian governments? And I'm speaking beyond Canada now, but that becomes obviously a very scary and dangerous proposition, especially when Canadians' data is not necessarily all housed or we don't know in Canada, if that's even a sufficient protection unto itself. And platforms are certainly being used to process and data brokers. Open Media did a big report about all the private companies that are being used by political parties to process and analyze all of this data. So all of these sorts of concerns make this type of collection an even bigger concern and as being incompatible with democracy.
You really do highlight how the implications of this issue go well beyond just the individual and sort of a particular data point here or there, but are far bigger in terms of our society and democracy more broadly. Why don't we close with this? You know, it seems unlikely at this stage that this issue is going to become much of a significant issue as part of this election campaign. There's other issues people are focused on. Democracy, of course, people are very much focused on, but the specific issue around privacy, you know, so far, we haven't seen a lot of reasons based on your descriptions for reason for optimism in terms of how the parties themselves may deal with these issues. But, you know, if we were to get a commitment to political party privacy, what are the kinds of things that you think that we should be focused on or thinking about?
I mean, number one would be continuing to demand that the 10 fair information principles be applied to political parties, and provinces could do that, assuming that the court case stands as is, that which would allow provinces to have laws governing political federal parties. But I think also beyond that, there is such a need for a privacy law to continue to evolve in light of what our data systems look like today. Right now, our privacy regimes are really very much based on the individual informed consent model, which is so inadequate for our situation today, because personal information isn't just collected by individuals or from individuals. My information is in your address book. It's others are providing my information to tech platforms all the time. Statistical inferences are made about groups and then applied to individuals who had no interaction or knowledge that they are being engaged in providing any kind of information about themselves. We're known through the statistical inferences about groups now. And so many are starting to call for more group-based privacy. And I think the ideas about what that would look like are still kind of evolving and starting to be fleshed out. But I think ultimately we would need much greater regulation of what's collected. Also, confirmation or bolstering of the idea that inferences are part of personal information and that they're not information owned by platforms or whoever made the inferences. Are they actually personal information? That's something that's very important. And I know platforms sometimes try to argue that their inferences about us, including highly sensitive inferences, are not necessarily part of our personal information. So that's crucial, because that would take it right outside of privacy regimes. But yeah, much greater regulation of these types of uses of personal information that are just so absolutely crucial in democratic processes, because people's confidence in elections and in political parties and in democracy as it evolves and changes maybe evolves is a bad word because that implies improvement, anyways, is really at stake.
This has been, I think, really enlightening. Sarah, thanks so much both for the work that you've done on the issue and for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.